Welcome to the HMO Success Podcast. I'm your host, Wendy Whitaker-Large, and I'm here to help you create a profitable HMO portfolio. Whether you're a brand new investor or you've been at it for a number of years, my podcast is here to help you make the most from your business, whether that is starting up, scaling, or systemizing. Please hit the subscribe button to make sure you never miss an episode. And if you've got an awe-inspiring project, an inspirational investing story, or a unique approach to HMOs, I'd love to hear from you. I came across Shaz a few years ago. I was at Progressive Property, probably at some kind of session or other. I can't remember what session it was. And he bounded onto the stage with great enthusiasm and in his inimitable style and gave a fantastic presentation about tax savings. I think particularly actually it was about capital allowances, actually, Shaz, you were talking about capital allowances. And I just thought, wow, this is so powerful. This is amazing stuff. And I bought your book. Shaz might tell you a little bit about his book. It's one of the best property tax books you can buy. And I've read a lot of them, and some of them are very flimsy and don't give really any content. And some of them are much, much more detailed and much more. You can tell that somebody with an expert eye, an expert view has written it. And that was what I got from Shaz's book. I really got loads and loads of learning out of it. So hopefully at the end, he will tell you where you can buy his book. And yeah, it's been a really, really great learning for me to understand how to become tax efficient or more tax efficient. I'm sure I'm going to learn stuff tonight as well. So Shaz, I'm going to hand over to you. You might want to give yourself a bit of an introduction, perhaps tell us a little bit about yourself. And that would be great.
Thank you very
Take
much.
Take it away.
See, when I started speaking many, many moons ago, Wendy, I always used to think, what do I add in a presentation? Because there's only so much you know because you're starting off. And then when you get to my age now, you think about what do I leave out? And there's so much that you can share. I mean, this could be a four-hour session. But I'm trying to include a few things which I hope people all on this webinar tonight will find useful. And that's why I've labeled it essential and effective steps for property investors to become tax efficient. So a bit about myself, in case people haven't heard of me, because I'm not that popular or famous, unless you're a seasoned property investor. I'm a chartered accountant, qualified many, many years ago. We specialize in working with property investors, developers, HMOs, commercial conversions, and everything in new builds and everything in between. I'm a property investor myself. My main strategy nowadays, and has been for the last 6 or 7 years, commercial conversions. At the moment, we're building 49 houses in a small village called Bicker in Boston, Lincolnshire. And the next project, which we're about to start in about 4 weeks' time, subject to the first line of funding coming through, is we bought the main post office again in Boston. And the reason why I invest in Boston, to say everybody knows, it's about a 45-minute drive from Peterborough, and it's pretty local. And that was a post office. We have obtained planning for 22 flats, mixed use, one and two bedroom flats, and part of the ground floor will remain a commercial property. So that's what's keeping me busy at the moment in the world of property. We've won a number of awards for entrepreneurship and in accountancy. I'm a keynote speaker, so I go up and down the country and also join webinars like Wendy's. And I'm grateful, Wendy, for you to invite me here today. So it was a pleasure. I've written a number of books on business. And as Wendy said earlier, one on property tax, which I will talk about right at the end. And I own a few different businesses, married with four children. So I try and keep as busy as I can. A bored Shaz is not a good Shaz, by the way. So to start off with, our tax code in this country here is one of the most complicated and one of the most comprehensive tax codes in the world. What that means is it's complicated and there's never a straight answer. You can have two people with virtually the same circumstance, but with one small change, okay, and the tax treatment could be vastly different. And this is why you have to be really, really careful when you're talking to somebody or watching a YouTube video or a talk or talking to somebody in the pub or elsewhere. And don't take advice from Dave in the pub because Dave is talking about his own situation and that might not apply to you. So it's important you always take good professional advice because those people are experienced practitioners and they will tell you what applies to you and what doesn't apply to you. But coming back to the tax code, although it's complicated, there are lots of booby traps Okay, but also tax breaks. And you have to work with somebody who knows what those tax breaks are, because there are different rates, reliefs, allowances, exemptions, which may apply to you. And sometimes you can change the situation slightly so that something can apply to your situation. But the worst thing to do is try and seek advice after the event, because tax only really applies to a transaction, okay, or tax planning before the event takes place. Once the event's taken place, it's very difficult to undo, especially if you bought a property, for example, and then it's too late. So make sure you're proactive and you're seeking advice in advance as opposed to after the event, because it won't work. So we'll start off with stamp duty land tax, because that's the one that people usually come across when they first come into the world of property. And this is something that you pay when you are buying a property. Lots of different reliefs available. I'm going to cover a few for you just to raise your awareness. And the purpose of this particular webinar is to raise your awareness as opposed to going into anything in too much detail. And of course, I can answer questions for you later and I'll show you how you can contact me too. The first one is multiple dwellings relief. So if you are buying two or more properties from somebody at the same time, you can average out the price of the two properties and pay SDLT on that value. So for example, SDLT works in different bands. And if you're buying, let's say, one property which is worth, let's say, £600,000, another one which is worth £100,000, the SDLT on both those will be significantly different. But if you add the two together, it gives you £700,000 divided by two, and which is £350,000, you then pay SDLT on the 350, which would be significantly less than the SDLT on a single property worth £600,000. So all you need to remember is two more properties, you can claim MDR and obviously go to an accountant and they can help and advise you. And obviously, depending on the experience of your solicitor, they may also know about this. The second one, which is very, very popular, is if you are buying a property that is uninhabitable. And in this particular instance, this does not mean that there's no kitchen. This means that the property, you cannot live in a property. So two common examples for you. If a roof's missing, it's uninhabitable. If a property has significant asbestos, uninhabitable. There are obviously other things that could be in a property which are health hazard and you can't live in it. If that happens, you can use the Bewley and other cases. And you then pay non-residential rates of SDLT, which tend to be lower depending on obviously the overall value of a property. So bear that in mind. If you buy six or more residential properties in one particular transaction, you can then choose to either pay the standard rates or use the non-residential rates of SDLT and work out which one applies best to you. But also, you can, because you're buying two or more, in this case, six properties, you have three options: standard rate, non-residential rate, or multiple dwellings relief. And you do the calculation, whichever one works out the lowest, you can use that particular rate and you'll be absolutely fine. If you're buying property from probate, there are certain conditions you have to meet, but if you do meet those conditions, you pay no stamp duty land tax. Same with if you are rescuing a chain. So let's say there's four or five people in a chain, the chain's about to break and you come in and rescue the chain, no SDLT on that particular transaction as long as you meet the conditions. More often than not, and this is you, the next one usually applies to people when they are moving home, but it doesn't have to, by the way. So let's say you own a house and you're looking to buy, let's say, a bigger house, and that bigger house has a granny annex. As long as the granny annex has a separate entrance, its own kitchen, bedroom, living space, then you are buying two properties, okay, even though it's one legal title, which means you can apply multiple dwellings relief as long as, again, you meet the conditions, and you'll pay less stamp duty land tax. So that this is one to bear in mind. If you're buying mixed-use property, i.e. downstairs commercial, uppers are residential, then you don't pay the additional 3%. So bear that in mind. And these are some of the kind of common ones. There are many other SDLT saving opportunities. So whenever you enter into a transaction, either speak to your solicitor or speak to a tax advisor who specializes in SDLT, and they can help and guide you. And again, if you ask the question, if there's no savings, at least you know you've sought the advice, as opposed to finding out after the event. Now, of course, if you find out 2 or 3 months after the event, once your SDLT returns have been filed, you have a 12-month window where you can make a reclaim. After that, you still have a further 3 years, but that makes it more complicated. So best to do these things in advance. A very quick example for you. And again, if you have any questions, by the way, you can raise your hand. And Wendy, if you can just take those questions for me, and then I'll happily answer them as I go along. But I'm going to kind of go through these slides pretty quickly, just so we can cover everything. I had a client who was buying a property via an option agreement. And to keep it simple, her FDLT exposure was £107,550. And she had some time to obviously complete on the option agreement. We restructured her particular transaction. And she saved a huge amount of SDLT to the tune of £55,050. That's a significant amount of SDLT saving. Just so everybody on this call knows, and anybody listening to this as a podcast or a YouTube video, none of the stuff I'm sharing with you is racy, pacey tax avoidance schemes. This is the simple tax planning based on the rules set by the government and obviously policed by HMRC. So I do not get involved in anything which is super aggressive, because that usually means some form of tax avoidance or something which is kind of sailing a bit close to the wind. And most people obviously aren't comfortable with that, and I try and avoid that. So it's really simple stuff that works. And if HMRC look at this stuff here, we can point them towards the relevant legislation, and we've never had a problem so far. And I've been in business for 21 years now. So a pretty decent track record, if I may say so myself. And this is the person who we did that particular tax planning for, Agata. And that's just a few words from her to say that she was very pleased with the outcome. Incorporation relief and Section 24, this has been about for quite a few years. So I have no intention of going into this into significant detail, but I thought I'd just point a few things out to you. Again, if you have questions, happy to answer them. So the starting point is you have some property in your own name. Section 24 affects you. Therefore, you can't claim all your finance costs, and you're thinking, what do I do? So the starting point is you may have to pay stamp duty, land tax, and capital gains tax on the value or the excess value since you bought the properties if you move those properties into a limited company wrapper. If your business qualifies as a business, or your property portfolio qualifies as a business, then no capital gains tax to pay, so long as Section 162 incorporation relief applies. If you bought those properties as a partnership and the partnership incorporates, then no stamp duty land tax to pay either. But if you have all the properties in your own name and you want to incorporate, and let's say you've got 10 properties or two HMOs with 5 units each, so 10 units in your own name, most likely there'd be no capital gains tax because we can demonstrate that a business exists, but and claim Section 162 incorporation relief, but you will have to pay stamp duty land tax. If you bought that with your life partner, spouse, or a business partner, and you have a proper partnership that exists, then there's no SDLT to pay. Sometimes people obviously say, I've got 10 properties using the early example in my own name. I'd like to keep 2 of them because they don't have a mortgage. The other 8 I want to incorporate. Unfortunately, you can't do that. It's all or nothing. So you have to incorporate the whole lot, or you can't incorporate anything whatsoever. The capital gains tax, even though you don't pay it, you defer it. So it gets rolled up in the shares and the change in the value of the shares, which will affect the tax you pay if you sell those shares. Now, generally speaking, if you have 10 properties, you move those properties into a limited company, it's highly unlikely you are going to sell the shares of your business to a third party unless that they are interested in buying your entire portfolio. Usually you may sell 1 or 2 or some of the properties over time. The real big benefit of incorporation, by the way, is when you incorporate your properties, the value of your properties is rebased for tax purposes. So for example, let's say, Wendy, you bought a property 20 years ago in Stoke-on-Trent for £20,000, and that property today is worth £100,000. If you would sell that property and you bought it in your own name, you'd obviously pay tax on the £80,000 gain, less your annual exemption, less any cost, legal fees, SDLT, and other improvement costs. Let's just keep it simple and say it's an £80,000 gain. You'd have to pay tax on that. If you were to incorporate, and that's part of a portfolio and all the other things apply to you in terms of no CGT and no SDLT, so you decide to incorporate, the value of that property now in your books on the limited company is £100,000. And let's say 2 years later, you decide, I want to sell that particular property and it's worth £110,000. Okay. You only made a £10,000 gain in the company. So you'd pay, obviously, the corporation tax on the £10,000 gain. And that's a significant saving. So incorporation isn't just about Section 24, by the way. There are other reasons why you should incorporate or think about incorporating, which add a huge benefit. When you do incorporate, and people have different views on this, by the way, but I think it's important when you incorporate, you should look to refinance. If you do, you need to bear in mind the cost in terms of the arrangement fees, the interest rate, in terms of your own name versus limited company, the additional legal fees, and the compliance costs of having a limited company versus property in your own name. Alongside that, you need to be thinking about, obviously, Section 24, exit planning, salary versus dividend versus income tax on properties owned personally. And another good advantage of incorporating is you can, once you incorporate, have a trust, and there are different trusts available. And I don't specialize in trusts, by the way. I have a colleague in the office who does, which will help you mitigate your inheritance tax exposure. And sometimes people just incorporate because they're looking to mitigate their IHT liability, and they like the rebasing of the value of their properties. So here, that's a bit on incorporation. But the main reason people tend to incorporate is Section 24. But that ought not to be the only reason.
Shaz, can I just jump in there?
Of course.
Fantastic. Very, very strong arguments you're making there for incorporation. Question that's come up in the chat panel is, what if you've remortgaged while you own the property in your own name? So, for example, let's say you bought the property for £100,000 and it's gone up to £200,000 and you decide to withdraw some of that money in the form of a new mortgage. Now, I suppose the question would be, A, what if you decide to incorporate? How does that affect that situation? B, what if you decide to sell in terms of capital gains tax? You may be coming onto that, of course.
If you refinance, Wendy, and you're on a fixed deal, then obviously to come out of the fixed deal, you'll have to pay a penalty. If there's no penalty payable, you can then refinance again into a limited company. It's fine. But obviously, if there's a penalty to pay, then that is part of the calculation in terms of all the cost of the share with you, in terms of arrangement fees, legal fees, so on and so forth. So you add up the numbers and say, is it worth me incorporating, or do I wait until I come out the fixed rate deal to then incorporate at some point in the future? So I had somebody call me, I think it was on Monday, and he's got, I think, 14 properties, but he refinanced 5 of them 6 months ago, and he's on a 5-year fixed deal. And the total value of those mortgages was about £1 million with a 5% penalty. And it just wasn't worth him paying that. So he's just going to wait until obviously comes up the fixed rate deal, and then he'll incorporate. In terms of the capital gains tax, are you talking about the CGT when you incorporate or now?
Now, let's say if you decide to sell when you have remortgaged the property.
Uh-huh. I'm not too sure what that question is asking. If the question is asking, I've refinanced, can I claim the refinance costs against the gain on the property? The answer is no. But if you bought a property for £100,000, as you've said, and now it's worth £200,000 and you refinance, capital gain tax works very simply. It says sold property for £200,000, bought it for £100,000. So you made a £100,000 gain, less any costs that apply, less your annual exemption, and you pay the tax on it. The mortgage value amount has no bearing on capital gains tax.
Brilliant, thank you. Well, listen, I'll ask for the questioner to clarify the question a little bit further, and I'll come back to you. But you carry on doing a great job.
Thank you. Here, so I've just done a small chart here for you, just to show you what the impact of salary versus dividend is. Because this is a common question people ask: should I take a salary from my company, or should I take dividends? So the first option here, I've shown you salary at your personal allowance and the rest are dividends, taking up to the total value of £6,000. And the effective rate of tax on that will be 20.48. If you're taking salary at the NIC threshold, which is slightly higher, plus the balance as dividends, the rate's 24.04%. If you're taking the entire thing as a dividend, it's 23.96%. The whole thing as a salary, 34.35%. So in this example here, you can see, if it's taking or extracting £6,000 from your limited company, taking a combination of a low salary plus balance as dividends at a rate of 20.48% is the best thing to do. But again, it depends on your circumstances. Sometimes people are refinancing and they're saying there's a particular lender is saying your salary has to be £30,000 or £40,000 because they don't take dividends into consideration. And if for that particular reason, you may then increase your salary so you can refinance. But it's horses for courses, depending on the particular situation. But generally speaking, low salary plus dividends used to be a good way forward. But now as the tax rules have changed and the tax dividend allowance has reduced significantly, you just got to do those numbers to see what works for you in your scenario. Another question people sometimes ask is, I've been thinking about, or I've seen a video, I've talked to somebody, should I take a bonus or a dividend? So here, I've shared an example here with you. If someone's a basic rate taxpayer, okay, and they've used up their personal allowance and their dividend allowance in the year, if they take a £20,000 bonus, they've, or as a basic rate taxpayer, so their income is less than £50,000, they'd pay 41.98% tax. They took a dividend, 26.09%. Higher rate, obviously the figures are higher, but again, taking a dividend is better than taking a bonus. And oops, for additional rate, again, in all three examples, have taken a dividend versus a bonus is, oh, sorry, over a bonus is a better idea. Now, you might be thinking, is it possible to save a huge amount of tax in the world of property? Because people keep talking about there are tax saving opportunities, and you go to see your accountant and they say, yes, but well, it depends. And the only question in your mind is, can I really save a huge amount of tax? So I thought what I would do, Wendy, is explore a project that I worked on quite a few years ago and share a real life example of something that I've done myself. So I'm going to do that, and no doubt we'll have some questions, or people will hopefully find some useful tips here. So I bought this particular place here, which is called the New England Club. And everything that you can see in the photo is this particular site. Excuse the photo. Photography is not my strength, as you can see. So this is the property here on the right-hand side. You can see just New England Club. That's the actual physical property. Left-hand side of the area sketched in red is the car park. And the top left, which is number 336, is an existing two-bedroom house. So this is what we bought back in 2016. We bought it for £500,000. There was three of us. We formed a partnership and we paid cash for this particular property. The planning and the legal cost in terms of obtaining planning for 6 one-bedroom flats and 6 two-bedroom flats cost us £65,000. We refurbished, and the cost at that time was £400,000 to refurbish it. And we usually get involved in the work ourselves, so it's cheaper to do it that way rather than subcontracting to a third party. But again, it depends on your expertise. Because there were three of us, we had expertise in different areas. One of them was a builder, so he was able to, or had, sorry, was had significant experience of working with builders, and was able to ensure that we were able to save a lot of money on this particular transaction. And we borrowed the £400,000 from a private lender and paid £52,500 interest during the period of that particular refurbishment or redevelopment. And it took us, I think, 10 months. So generally speaking, a commercial conversion from start to finish will take you about 18 months, depending on your expertise. And obviously the refurbishment or the redevelopment time depends on the size and scope and experience of the people doing the actual transaction. So the total cost to us was just over £1 million. The expected GDV at the time was 1.320 million. So in very simple maths, we were making a profit of £302,500, which back then, I guess, wasn't too bad. It was okay. So it's not brilliant and it's not bad either. So the first thing that usually you come across in a commercial property transaction is there any VAT on a property? And generally speaking, the reason why a commercial property would have VAT are the two most common reasons is you're buying a property which was built within the last 3 years, in which case it would have VAT on it, or you're buying a property from somebody who opted to tax. So let's say somebody has a property worth £500,000 and the previous tenants vacated and it's quite tired and they need to spend £100,000 on it, and they're going to spend that money themselves. And they're incurring obviously 20% VAT, and they go to their accountant and say, is there any way I can reclaim the VAT? And the accountant says, yes, you can. You opt to tax the building, and then you can reclaim the £20,000 VAT. But there's two things you have to do going forward. One is charged VAT on the rent. And then when you sell the property, if you sell the property, you'll have to charge VAT on the sale. And once you opt to tax, you're into that particular regime for the next 20 years. So it's a serious commitment. However, if you're buying a property with a sitting tenant, then the transfer of going concern rules may apply to you, which very simply means you still register for VAT, but you don't have to pay the VAT on the transaction, which is a cash flow or cash flow advantage to you, because usually when people are buying commercial property, more often than not, they are going to a bank for some form of funding. And if there's VAT on a transaction, you then ask the bank to fund that as well. And they usually fund that for 4 to 6 months. And then you've got obviously associated costs. So this saves the costs on that. On top of that, when you're buying a property with VAT, the SDLT payable is the price of the property plus the VAT. So using the, let's say you're selling the property for £500,000, 20% VAT, which gives you £600,000, you'd pay the SDLT on £600,000. If you did a transfer going concern, i.e. you have a sitting tenant in there, then you're paying £500,000 because you're not paying the VAT. Therefore, you pay SDLT on the £500,000. And then in this particular example, you'd save 5% on the 100 grand, which is £5,000. That's something to think about. If you're doing a commercial conversion, which I know some people on this webinar may be thinking of or are doing them, then you've got the option of VAT 1614D. And this is something that you give to the seller. If they accept it, you don't pay VAT on the transaction whatsoever, because you're saying to them, my intention is to convert these into residential use, therefore I don't wish to pay VAT. And I've just listed here some of the savings. Obviously, in both these examples here, you'd pay less arrangement fees because there's no additional VAT to fund. You'd pay less interest because you wouldn't be funding the VAT, savings in SDLT. And then, of course, if you pay the VAT, you then have to go to your accountant and try and reclaim that VAT back from HMRC. And they may have quite a few questions and may take some time to give the money back to you. And that can obviously incur additional costs. So it saves you all that additional work too. On top of that, for our particular example here, you may be able to claim capital allowances. And in our particular case or this particular building, the capital allowances in this building, which was a former working men's club, and there was £129,000 worth of capital allowances, which is quite significant. Just around 25% of the value of the entire property. And I've listed out here for you all of the things that exists in that particular property which qualified for capital allowances. So there's quite a bit there. And this obviously can save you tax in the future, because you can write off capital allowances against profits. How much you can write off depends on what the actual expense is and when the expense was incurred. We bought the property, okay? And so if you buy a property and it has some form of contamination, you may be able to claim land remediation relief. And in this case, this property had asbestos. So we cleared the asbestos and claimed land remediation relief, where you get 150% relief. So if you spent £10,000, you get £15,000 as an expense, so an extra 50%, which is £14,250. What we then did was we had to pay business rates on the property. And while we were applying for planning, we had a local charity which was working with homeless people. So we spoke to the council, said if we give this property to this charity and they are obviously responsible for the rates, can they get rate relief? And then the council said they will get 100% rate relief. So we gifted the property for 12 months, which means we charged no rent to our local charity. They took responsibility for the business rates, which saved us £10,600. The next one is incorporation. As I said to you earlier, we bought the property as a partnership, obtained planning permission on it. And when you apply for planning permission, what happens to the value of the property? It obviously goes up depending on what planning you've got in place. In this particular case, we said, now we've got planning for 12 flats, 6 one-bedroom, 6 two-bedroom. We feel the property's increased by £150,000 in value, which is quite conservative, really. And we moved that property into a limited company. And just like I shared with you earlier, in terms of the base cost now becomes £650 and not £500,000. So in the end, the £150,000 uplift, we're obviously going to save corporation tax when we sell the property. At that time, obviously, it would have been 19%. Now those rates have changed. We then claimed capital allowances, which you saw on the previous slide, and the tax saving value of that was £23,964. So significant. We didn't pay the VAT on the transaction, so the saving on the SDLT on that, the interest, the fees, £7,500. What we also did, and this isn't a tax saving per se, but this is cash, because it was a former working men's club, they had pool tables in there, they had fruit machines, other items in there, and they had nowhere to store. So they said, is it okay if we leave all our stuff here for 3 months and we'll pay you £7,500 for those 3 months? And we said, absolutely, why not? So it was just an extra cash coming into the bank for us. When you're doing commercial conversion, just so you know, you pay 5% VAT on the refurbishment. And the 5% rule applies if you're increasing the number of units, reducing the number of units, or if you are refurbishing a house which has been empty for 2 years. Rather than paying 20%, you pay 5%. Okay, and that was a saving of £20,000 for us. So all in all, savings of £112,314. All tax savings by the £7,500, which was rent coming in, but it's cash nonetheless. Now, if we were to sell those particular units, then the personal tax we'd pay an hour, I worked at 40%, just to kind of keep it reasonable. And the profit is £202,400. Tax at 40% would give us £121,000, which means we'd have £181,400 left to reinvest in our own names. This is personal tax, yeah? If we incorporate, which we obviously did, and we make a £202,400 profit, and at a rate of 19% tax, and obviously the tax rates change now depending on how much profit you make overall, you'd pay £57,456 in tax, leaving you with £245,044. Yeah, this was based on the tax rate was 19%. Now, like I said, the tax rates changed, and there's marginal rates as well. So it would depend on the overall value of how much profit you make in terms of how much tax you pay. So you can see here, if we sell, there's a significant saving in terms of tax. Yeah, that gives you a saving of £63,644 cash coming in, plus all the tax savings from the previous slide, which is £112,314, gives you additional cash flow of £175,958. That's not a bad day's work, is it, Wendy? It's pretty good going for anybody. So that's an option. The other option, obviously, is you can hold on to the properties and then rent them out. And obviously, you've got cash flow and some capital appreciation over future years too. We kept the property and we've rented it out because we usually don't sell unless there's a good reason to sell, i.e. where someone makes us a good offer or some other reason where a partner wants to exit and we can't afford to buy them out, so we all sell. But more often than not, we keep all of our units. So you can see here, just kind of small, simple things like SDLT, like VAT, like capital allowances, and some of the other things I've shared with you, which aren't racy or pacey, can have a significant impact on your bottom line. Now, there's a lot we can talk about in terms of business structure, but again, I'm just going to point one or two things out to you to share with you, because I think they would be useful. So the common problem that people come to me with is they have a business, and let's say that they're an IT contractor, for example, and they've usually contractors amass quite a bit of money over the years in their limited company because they don't want to pay the additional tax when they take the money out personally in terms of income tax. So they have quite a bit of cash in their account and they then want to utilize those funds and end up buying properties. And they get to a stage, for example, and this, by the way, doesn't have to be an IT contractor. I'll just use that as an example. It could be any trading business. It could be my accountant's practice. Then they get to a stage where they're looking to either sell their trading business or they're looking to wind it up. And obviously, they've got these properties in there as well. And they may not qualify for something called entrepreneur's relief, which is now called business asset disposal relief, which basically means you pay 10% tax on the first £1 million worth of proceeds, as long as you haven't used that in the past and as long as you meet the rules for business asset disposal relief. And they say, this is a common problem. What do I do? By the way, at the top here, obviously, the investment company, and then here they've got different companies in it. The best thing to do there is we form a holding company, and we then in the holding company we move all of the different SPVs, and the investment company remains where it was at the start. So now this particular holding company, okay, sits separate to the investment company. So you can split it. And generally speaking, when people have a limited company, they think, what's the best structure? So if you are just doing standard buy-to-lets or HMOs, and they're all with you yourself, or with you and a spouse or business partner, and you're always buying, let's say, 50-50 between two of you, then all you need really, in my view, is one limited company, and you just keep buying in that particular company. If you've got different partners, then you would need a holding company structure, which is what you can see on the left here with HCo, and underneath, and you had different SPVs, and you can have different partners, or as in shareholders, in those companies. If you're doing commercial conversions, you wouldn't do it in the investment company, simply because there are 101 and more things that can go wrong in a commercial conversion. So you want to limit that risk by having it in a separate SPV, and then obviously, if God forbid something were to go wrong, at least you don't jeopardize and risk all your other properties. The only time you would risk them is if you give a cross guarantee to a bank or a third party lender on those other companies. I would say stay away from that. Do not give cross guarantees. It might seem like a good idea at the time, but if something goes wrong, you're putting everything at risk. So don't do that. And when you have things in a separate SPV, generally speaking, I find banks and third party lenders prefer that, because then there's other banks aren't involved and other lending is involved. It's neater and tidier. Now, some brokers will tell you if you have a holding company, it's harder to get funding. I've heard that a lot, but in my 21 years in property, I've never come across that. So I'm not saying it doesn't exist, by the way. It does, because people talk about it, but we've never had a client or any of my own transactions where a lender has said, because you have a holding company, we will not lend funds to you. So it does exist out there, but you can get around it because there are plenty of lenders who will invest, will give you the funds. So in this particular example, when you split trading from investment, you de-risk the entire structure. You can claim entrepreneur's relief. You can also claim something called investor's relief, which I won't cover today, but again, you can read up on that. I'm happy to answer questions. You don't. And generally speaking, the government incentivizes people to trade, and the government, generally speaking, isn't too fond of investors, because generally speaking, investors tend to have an image where the government tends to think they are more affluent, more wealthy, therefore the tax rules that apply to them are not as generous. So there's lots of tax reliefs, allowances, exemptions for a trading business, and there aren't that many for a investment business. And when you're buying a property and you're holding on to it, that's an investment business. If you're buying commercial property, converting and selling those units, that would be a trading business. So that's just something for you to bear in mind if you're in that particular situation. The most common structures, obviously, are buying property in your own name. The second one is two people buying property together. And let's say Wendy and I buy property together and we own it 50% each. That is not a partnership business. And people use that all the time. Obviously, it's not a partnership. That's property owned jointly. So she and I own 50% each. And that is not a partnership in terms of the legal sense. Her name and my name would be on the land registry and all the other documentation, but it's not a partnership per se. If Wendy were to buy this property with a spouse, and Wendy's a high rate taxpayer, and let's say spouse is a basic rate taxpayer, then Wendy could do a deed of trust and assign some of the beneficial interest to her life partner to use up their basic rate band of tax, and file a Form 17 with the HMRC within 60 days of the deed of trust, and then change the ownership. Okay, so in property, you've got legal ownership, and then you've got beneficial ownership. Legal ownership is what you see on land registry. Beneficial ownership is how is the actual split of the proceeds of this particular property. And for tax purposes, we go with beneficial ownership and not legal ownership. It's a bit like a car. You know, the logbook may be in your name, but that doesn't mean that you actually own the car. So this works in a similar way. The third option is a proper partnership. And the fourth option is a limited company. There are other options as well, but these are the other four most common ones. So things to think about when you're looking at whether when you incorporate is, do I take dividends, and what value of dividends do I take to remain tax efficient? How much salary you should take? Should you take any bonuses? Are there any benefits in kind that you may have to pay, or any benefits you get from the company? Pension contributions. If you loan money from the company, what's the impact of that to you and the company? If you loan money to your company, what benefits can you get? And simply speaking, if you loan money to your company, you can charge interest. Okay. And if you charge interest, if you don't have any other savings income and you're a basic rate taxpayer, the first £1,000 is tax-free. If you're a high rate taxpayer, the first £500 is tax-free. And if you're an additional rate taxpayer, then there's no tax-free amount. But if a company pays you interest, you have to file a CT return to say that you've had interest from your company. And the same applies if you are paying interest to a third party. Then sometimes what happens is you may own an asset which you rent to a property, to a company, and you can charge rent on that too. Some other things that you ought to be aware of: if you're married, you've got the marriage allowance where you can share the, if your spouse hasn't used up their basic personal allowance, you can use up some of that. You've got something called the starting rate savings allowance, which may apply to you. And you've got your personal savings allowance, which again may apply to you. And alongside, obviously, your personal allowance for the year. The personal allowance for the year and the personal savings allowance are two different things. Quite often people say, what are some of the things that property investors miss out on? And these are some of the obvious ones. Capital allowance is a big one. So when you buy a commercial property, you need to speak to somebody who can advise you on capital allowances. You get two bites of the cherry depending on your situation. So when you're buying a property, you may be able to claim capital allowances on the purchase. Then when you refurbish the property, if you're doing service accommodation, you can claim a second lot of capital allowances on the refurbishment costs. You don't want to miss out on those. Secondly, cars. Depending on the type of car you have, if you're looking to get a new car from the company, and it's an electric car, very tax efficient, you only pay tax on 2% of the value of the car. If you're getting a hybrid, that's reasonably tax efficient. But if you were to get a gas guzzler, like let's say a Lamborghini, through a limited company, bad idea. The tax is huge. In that case, what you should think about is having a business in your own name, or a partnership, or an LLP. Because all those three formats, there's no benefit in kind tax. All you do is work out the total cost of the car, and then you work out how much the car you use for personal purposes. So let's say you work out that the car costs you £20,000 a year to run and maintain, i.e. finance costs, fuel, insurance, repairs, maintenance, so on and so forth. And you work out that 20% of the time you use the car for personal purposes, 80% for business purposes. So the 20,000, 80% of that you claim through your business, which is £16,000, £4,000 you don't claim. So that's more tax efficient than having a Lamborghini through a company, because you'd pay company car tax, which would be huge. And then if the company were paying for the fuel, then you got to pay a fuel charge tax as well, which is significant too. Land remediation, I've already covered for you briefly. If you're a property developer, you may be able to claim R&D relief, depending on how involved you are in overcoming certain problems in building homes. Something else which is important is if you have children or other people who are involved in your business, and you may wish to give them some income and some capital, then think about having different classes of shares. So generally speaking, when you form a company, you have ordinary shares, but you can have alphabet shares, A down all the way to Z. You give different people different shares, and then you can give them different powers. So different shares can have different voting rights, rights to income, rights to distribution, and rights on winding up. So you can limit who has what. Because sometimes, Wendy, what happens is you speak to a husband and wife, and they've got three children, and they think we want to give them some income over the years. We're not keen to give them voting rights, because they might have enough power to then start making choices for the business, which we may not be happy with, among other things, by the way. In which case, you can give them, let's say, A class shares, or you can give child one, or the eldest child, A class, second one, B class, third one, C class, and say no voting rights. So they can never vote at any of the board meetings. So the husband and wife would have all the power, which is quite useful. And then obviously there's lots of different reliefs, allowances, exemptions. It's obviously virtually impossible to cover those on a 60-minute webinar, but I've already covered for you the manager allowance. If you work from home, make sure you claim use of home as an office. If you have employees, claim your employment allowance. If you rent a room to somebody in your own home, you've got the £7,500 rent a room relief, and you've got the personal savings allowance. So these are many of the things that you could look at to become tax efficient. If you want to know more about tax and you find out how to sleep at night, I've got a book on property tax, which I wrote a few years ago, which Wendy was very kind to reference at the start. It's called The Property Investor's Tax Guide on Amazon, priced very reasonably at £10.95, which I think is a bargain. See, that it took me about 15 months to put all the information together, and it's about 418 odd pages, so it's quite comprehensive, and there are lots of tips, and it's written in a way where it's for property investors and not obviously accountants or tax advisors. So I've kind of simplified it as best as I can, so you're able to follow everything in a step-by-step manner. So if you're interested, you can obviously buy the book, and hopefully you'll find more tax-saving tips there. My contact details are Wendy, and then I think I'm out of time, but if anybody has any questions, I'll happily answer them. I've got a Facebook group called Entrust Property Tax Experts. Feel free to join that. I'm on LinkedIn, YouTube, Twitter, well, X, formerly Twitter, although I don't tweet much now because I just end up spending too much time. Facebook and on Instagram, so you can contact me there. If you have any burning questions, you can call my office on 01733 555 667, or you can email me on shaz@aa-accountants.co.uk. I'll be more than happy to help or answer any questions that you may have. So Wendy, I've tried my best to stick to time. I sit to you an hour, and I think I'm 3 minutes left to go.
Shaz, I have to say, if your calculations on time are anything to go by, you are a very good calculator. That was excellent. Absolutely excellent. I loved your energy and your focus. Obviously, your knowledge and your passion comes across. And just from what you've talked about tonight, I can see there's lots of other areas that we could really delve into. There's lots of other examples that I'm sure that you could bring of savings that people have made in tax. And yet tax, as you say, is such a huge, huge area. I think a lot of people feel very overwhelmed, which is why they need an expert like you to guide us through some of those tricky and what seems to be complicated issues. But actually, when you know what you're doing, they're really not that complicated. But sometimes it's the knowledge that holds us back, or the lack of knowledge.
Absolutely. And you know, if you're in business and you make an extra pound, for example, Wendy, then there's cost associated to that pound. Really means 20% to you if you're working on a 20% margin. Whereas with tax, if you save a pound, it's 100% benefit. That pound goes straight back into your own pocket.
Absolutely. Absolutely. It's so very, very powerful.
It's big. It's big. Yeah,
it is. So we have another question on the chat panel, and everybody who's listening, if you'd like to throw your questions in the chat panel, there is some time for Q&A. So is an SPV just another name for the company structures that you've mentioned?
Yes. SPV stands for Special Purpose Vehicle. So it means you bought it for a particular purpose. And to keep it really simple, it's just a new limited company.
Great. Can you tell us a little bit about capital allowances for HMOs?
Okay. So The capital allowances available for HMOs are unfortunately significantly less than what they would be for serviced accommodation. So anything within a unit, you can't claim capital allowances on. Anything outside the unit in terms of the common areas, you can claim capital allowances on. So depending on the size of the HMO, the bigger the HMO, the bigger the value of the claim. To keep it really simple,
To keep it really simple. No, that's a really good answer. Thank you. Obviously, every case we have to keep stressing is different, and every building and every development is different. So it's worthwhile getting personalised tax advice on those kind of developments that you might be doing.
And there's quite a bit there because you could have cameras, you'll have fire alarms, smokes, all that type of stuff. So there's still a claim to be had when you have an HMO, but it's not going to be as significant as serviced accommodation. Because for the SA, you claim the whole lot.
Were you to convert a property into serviced accommodation. And after, you know, a couple of years, you think, do you know what, this would work better as an HMO, or I don't want, the management company hasn't worked very well, or there's reasons why I might want to convert it into an HMO. What happens about the capital allowances that you've claimed on the serviced accommodation when it was serviced accommodation, and now you're turning it into residential?
So I said at this kind of, when I was talking about capital allowances, the rate of tax that you save depends on the type of allowance and when you actually bought the item. So when somebody is running an SA business they've refurbished the property, and let's say they've spent £200,000 on the refurbish, and £150,000 of that £200,000 qualifies for capital allowances. You've got something, Wendy, called the annual investment allowance, which means the first £1 million that you spend, which qualifies for capital allowances, you can write off for tax in that particular year. If you don't write it off, then going forward, you write off a certain percentage depending on which pool your property, your expense is. So if it's in the general pool, you write off 18% every single year, which means it'll take you, I think, about 16 years to write off the £150,000. However, if you write it off all in one go in one particular year, you get a saving of 150 grand times the rate of tax. However, if you do that, and in 2 years' time, you then change it into an HMO, you then have to work out how much tax you saved on the 150 grand versus what capital allowances you can claim on the HMO. And then you have something called a balancing charge. So you have to pay additional tax on what you overclaimed in year one. However, if you only claim 18%, for example, if it's in the general pool in year one and year two, then you'll still have a clawback, because when it becomes an HMO, the value of the capital allowances reduces, and so you'll have to pay less back.
Yeah, I get it. Okay, great answer. Okay, anybody got any other questions on tax? As you can see, Shaz is expert on this. You know, he's done lots of different projects. He obviously couldn't showcase many case studies tonight because of the time constraints, but I'm really grateful, Shaz, you've come on. You know, you've freely given your time. We are incredibly grateful to you for what you've shared with us tonight. Please make sure everybody that you keep Shaz's details there. We've got a recording of this. I'll go through and edit a few bits out as well, make it suitable for public consumption. But if there are no other questions, I would really like to say a massive thank you to Shaz Nawaz for being here tonight. Round of applause for Shaz.
Thank you very much, Wendy. Always a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
The crowd goes wild. And sometimes what people need to do is digest it a little bit, think about it, consider what advice they need. But I would recommend that if you've got any questions about tax, how you structured your business, how you might structure your business, if you're going forward with the development, if you're looking at a particular project, if there's something like a capital, like a commercial property that you're looking at and you're thinking about converting it either to residential or converting it into an HMO, have a chat with Shaz. Just get on the phone with him. Have a natter with Shaz and find out the tax that relates to your situation. And I know that he will hugely help you save money and make you much more money as a result of what he can do in terms of his tax saving knowledge. So thank you very, very much indeed, Shaz, for being here this evening. It's been absolutely great to hear from you. And yeah, have a wonderful and successful 2024.
Thank you, Wendy, and you too. And thank you to everybody who joined today and asked their questions. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the HMO Success Podcast. If you'd like to know more about how you can create a profitable HMO business, please visit our website, hmosuccess.co.uk, to find out more. We have plenty of free tools and information for you there, and also on our Facebook group, The Ultimate HMO Success System. We look forward to connecting with you very soon. Thanks for listening.